Ohio homeowners are still struggling with high property tax bills. State lawmakers passed tax relief measures last year. Still, the new laws haven't provided much immediate help. Some legislators continue to craft bills to reform the state system, but an effort is underway to abolish property taxes in Ohio completely. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss other legislative options and what abolishing the state's property tax could mean are Ohio State Senator Bill Blessing, a Colerain Township Republican. Welcome back, Senator Blessing.
Thanks, Lucy.
And Cincinnati Inquirer political reporter Haley B. Miller. Thanks for being here, Haley.
Good to be back.
Haley, state lawmakers, as I mentioned, did pass some property tax relief bills last year that Governor DeWine signed into law in December. Tell us briefly about that legislation and how it was designed to help.
So there were a few different bills that passed last year. I would say probably the most significant was House Bill 186. That provides about $1.7 billion in property tax credits. And this is sort of aimed at helping the people who saw really large spikes in their home values. This bill would tie future tax hikes to inflation, so we wouldn't see some of like the crazy increases that we saw the past few years. But this is only targeted to certain school districts. These districts are at what's called the 20 mil floor. It's about 75% of Ohio school districts. So homeowners will see that tax credit starting later this year if they're eligible, if they're in one of those school districts. House Bill 186 also changes some of the tax credits that all homeowners currently receive. So it increases the owner occupancy credit, which is a credit that you get if you live in your home, you know, if you're not a landlord or something like that. And then it gradually eliminates this 10% non-business credit. So the idea is that more money will go to people who actually live in their homes. So that's 186. And then there were a few other bills that kind of in the same spirit are trying to like keep future tax hikes tied to inflation, changing the calculation for that 20 mil floor, which is going to help more homeowners experience fewer tax hikes. And then there was another bill that doesn't explicitly cut taxes, but it gives county budget commissions more power to reduce levies if they think they're excessive or unnecessary. So that's kind of a summary. These bills are very complicated and very detailed. So, that's the general gist.
Yeah. Senator Blessing, I know you've been working on property tax relief literally for years now, but you didn't support all those bills. Explain why.
Yeah, sure. And I should probably throw one other bill in there, and that would be the state operating budget. You're right. So the budget, House Bills 335, 129, 309, I voted against. I voted for 186 because of the non-business credit reform in there, which, you know, as we've talked about before, Vinebrook gets a lot of money from the state because of that. And also commercial real estate, like apartments, do not get that credit. So shifting that, I think was really, from my perspective, the only legitimate property tax reform in this package of bills, simply because if you're not on the floor and the rate of real estate appreciation is less than inflation, then it doesn't matter. Like, there really were no property tax cuts at that point. But beyond that, fundamentally, the underlying problem has not been solved, which is where we stand in terms of state level school funding for public education, as well as other things like local government fund. All of these helped subsidize local governments, local schools, and I think held property taxes in check for a number of years. And when that sort of thing went away, you, of course, see the corresponding increase in property taxes. So, you know, to me, it's just kind of like shifting local dollars around and just calling it victory.
Well, I know in your speech on the Senate floor opposing these some of these property tax reform bills, you said, quote, voters are angry over property taxes today, but I do think they'll be even angrier if the solutions we ratify do not work, end quote. What are you hearing? Are your constituents even angrier?
Oh, they're still angry. I don't think that went away. I think it's really kind of too early to tell like how this is going to play out. But, you know, a number of local school districts are doing exactly what I had predicted. They're all going, well, I shouldn't say they all are, but a good number of them are going to the ballot. You know, and it's not just the school districts, you know, the cities, for example, were affected by House Bill 335. And so these folks are going to the ballot and they're going to presumably pass them because in the past, these levies have by and large passed. So what's the net effect if we're passing these things and these folks aren't on the floor anymore, for example? The money's still going to be going to the local government. So it's like I kind of think a year or two out, folks are going to be like, what really happened other than some of the money that they'll get from the non-business credit reform, which is not insignificant, you know, for my house in Coleraine, which is $200,000 is what it's valued at. When that's fully phased in, it'll amount to $200 per year. But I think a lot of folks are unsatisfied with this and would like to see a more comprehensive fix.
We're talking about property taxes in Ohio and efforts to reform or abolish the system. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Haley, I know some of you and some of your colleagues talked with homeowners who are really concerned about whether they can afford to stay in their homes. What are some of the concerns that you all heard?
Yeah, I think people just continue to feel like they can't afford these, you know, property tax spikes that come every three or so years based on the timeline of how the state reappraises homes. And, you know, a lot of these folks are seniors, they're on fixed incomes, and, you know, in some cases, maybe they've paid off their mortgage, but you know, they're still dealing with these high property tax bills. I spoke with someone in Fairfield County. You know, they just went through the reappraisal process last year. And I mean, she's retired and her property taxes went up exponentially by about $4,700. So, you know, that's an extreme case, but even in the cases where, you know, people's property taxes are, you know, maybe only going up by a few hundred dollars. If you're on a fixed income and trying to budget for that, it's just really difficult.
Senator Blessing, do you have any concerns about the impact of these taxes on even first-time homeownership? I know that's kind of a different conversation, but it seems related. We got an email from one of our listeners, Nicholas, who says, how does this help young people who want to live on their own? Many are living at home and have been since COVID. I imagine for a lot of young people, they're looking at rents being really high, but also the price to buy a home is high, and taxes are no small part of that.
Yeah, so it's a lot to unpack there. But yes, school funding, housing, property taxes, they're all intricately tied. And so this none of those bills would have really helped somebody who wants to be a first-time homeowner. And I know there are folks that will say, well, let's do a first-time homeowner's tax credit. And I kind of think that's a bad solution as well. But here's one thing that's really kind of problematic with high property taxes is that, you know, taxing improvements, as we do in Ohio, the higher property taxes go, the more it stifles development. You know, that's in addition to, you know, NIMBYism, such as, you know, like, well, we want our zoning to be such that a parcel can only be like 1 acre minimum. These are things that make housing even more difficult to develop. So the higher property taxes actually make this harder in the long run, which is, again, one of the reasons why I'm pushing for the land value tax in SJR 7. I won't go into detail about that. But yes, I mean, this is really the why having the state jump in with respect to where they were with a local government fund years ago. Why, if we threw a lot more money into the school funding formula, you'd see the local governments need to rely on local property taxes less. And the state's economy of scale could be used to fill in some of the gaps, which, of course, would not be coming through property taxes. But this would also have sort of the dual benefit of providing for our local governments and public needs, but also making it more just cheaper and easier to develop housing overall, which is exactly what we want.
Well, you mentioned that resolution that would authorize land value taxes in Ohio, and it's like you read my mind because I did want to ask you about that. Could you explain what a land value tax is and how it's different from property taxes?
Yeah. So property taxes in Ohio are taxes on land and improvements. So we already are paying taxes on land today. A land value tax, which the only reason this has to be authorized in the Constitution is because it says taxes will be on land and improvements, but it's only a tax on land. And economists have broadly applauded land value taxes as being the most efficient taxes. They're very pro-density, pro-housing. And I think listeners can appreciate that if you tax improvements less, you get more improvements, which is good, but it simplifies so many things. If you're going to tax this as a dollar amount per acre, for example, suddenly now rentals, apartments, for example, are way more cheaper to develop. They're a lot cheaper in terms of taxation. And where is that made up? Well, there's a lot of empty lots in the city of Cincinnati, for example, that just get sat. People sit on those and don't sell them, even though it would be really helpful if they could be developed. So this sort of, change in taxation would go a long way. But again, it's only an option. It's permissive. No local government would ever have to take advantage of this. But I think a city like Cincinnati would benefit greatly. And by the way, if they build a lot more housing, housing becomes cheaper everywhere else in the county because that pressure on housing goes down. And by the way, since there's more housing generally, the property tax pie has now grown. So the same rate will actually bring in more revenue. And in theory, you could have lower rates bring in as much or more revenue, which also is a good thing.
You talked about how a land value tax would make it more affordable to develop an apartment complex, for example, on a piece of land. But would that make the tax burden higher for single-family homeowners and then lower for people who own and develop apartment buildings?
No, I don't think so, because the single-family homeowners, if you look in most places, like I'm on a quarter-acre lot, an apartment is going to have a decent size chunk of land in order to be an apartment. Although I admit that the land value tax, the idea here is you want to develop up more and less out, given that it's also big on land conservation. But I think the ones that would really be sort of penalized the most would be the folks that own, a house in a desirable area, but then happen to own like 20 acres of land and then would complain, well, my taxes went up because of that. And my response would be, yeah, well, you're also sitting on 20 acres of land, just sitting on them, not developing them, when we have a massive housing crisis where we need more land in areas where people need to live. And the incentive for that person would be to sell, which they would sell, I would imagine, at a pretty penny as they would today. But they could always keep it. They just have to pay a premium for, frankly, holding on to all of that land in a very desirable and in-demand area.
Again, we're talking about Ohio property taxes today for the full hour. If you've got questions, call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Senator Blessing, what would a land value tax mean for farmers who own lots of land, but most of that land sure isn't covered with buildings?
Government, as I've pitched it to farmers, because everybody brings that up, and yet the farmers that I've spoke to are like, actually, I kind of like this, in the sense that it could be an extremely low land value tax, one. Two, unlike CAUV or property taxation, it is completely decoupled from valuations and reappraisal cycles. And that's because the tax would be a dollar amount per acre, and it remains the same as long as local governments keep it at that level. But CAUV, for example, is on, you know, highly correlated to crop prices. So if commodity prices go up, farmers get dinged in the same way that homeowners would for valuation increases. Same thing for, you know, whatever property they own that they get hit with property taxes on, also get hit with valuation increases. All of that goes away with a land value tax. But now the tax is literally just for local government. It's not tied to any unvoted increases. And I think that it would also help farmers in terms of, you know, you're not going to have those issues with urban sprawl. So land conservation is a big issue for farmers, if not the number one issue. But if you're building more densely in Hamilton County and Cincinnati in particular, there's less demand for farmland overall. Moreover, a farmer, if they want to reduce their tax burden, can do a very high-tech operation like they do in the Netherlands, sell some of the land, and all those structures that they've built to have that more high-tech operation are now untaxed with a land value tax. So they become more efficient, pay less tax, but then there's more land available for everybody else, which is just a huge win for everybody. So, you know, I guess the final point that I would have on this is that even if farming communities decided never to levy a land value tax, the fact that they have that as an option would, I guarantee you, mean better bond ratings for them, because that is a tool that they have in their back pocket that, you know, bond ratings agencies see and say, well, you know what, if you're not levy, you're using that. But if you, in a pinch, had to use that, yeah, you're being fiscally responsible, your bond rating goes up. And I know that this is true because having spoken to city councilmen in areas where, you know, they have decided to forego going up to the unvoted 1% earnings tax maximum and kept it at 0.5%, the bond ratings agencies looked favorably upon them because they kept it at 0.5%. And if ever there were an emergency, they could raise taxes unilaterally in order to cover their liabilities. Hmm. So I'm convinced this, again, is a winner overall. And I would hope people would at least take a second glance at this.
We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Deborah. Thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
So I guess my first comment is the concept of taxing property instead of buildings would be the final coffin, the final nail in all the family farmers' coffins. That would be like the last thing that would turn them like under. But my question is, you know, we're all talking about how to make housing affordable and let people live in their homes, but nobody's ever talking about the $79 trillion in wealth that has been redistributed since 1975 from the bottom 90% to the top 1% in this country. Median household income would be double what it is today if income inequality had remained the same as it was in 1975. So we're all trying to chop up a very much smaller pie among a lot more people who just can't afford to live in this economy.
Okay. Well, thank you, Deborah. Senator Blessing, do you have any thoughts about that? That whole idea of income inequality and wealth distribution? I know a lot of that happens at the federal level, but...
Yeah, no, I would briefly say on the land value tax, again, we do pay those today, and those levels would be set by local governments. I think it's worth talking to economists on this, and I think they would tell you that this is not what people think it is going to be. But with respect to the wealth inequality issue, yeah, I have seen this. You know, yes, this is a federal level thing, but it's one of the reasons why I voted against the budget this cycle is because I had felt that we had done enough cuts on the income tax side, that we need to start taking care of our public goods. And frankly, at the federal level, you see this reflected with, you know, decades of tax cuts. But at the same time, they have not been paid for. You know, these have gone on the nation's credit card. And at some point, there is going to be a reckoning there. And I know folks have talked about cutting spending for these sorts of things, but you know, things like Medicaid and Social Security, Medicare, all strong public goods. And, you know, when pressed on them, you see legislators kind of turn and say, well, we're not going to touch those. And frankly, that's the right call, because those are our public goods. And I think a better way to look at this is, like, look at someone like Orrin Pass, who has written about this extensively now, that, you know, okay, you guys at the federal level can have tax cuts, but you can only do that if you can afford to pay for the public goods that you have now, which means that a lot of the tax cuts over the past 20 years, having not been paid for, would be something that he would push back and say, look, we need to go the other way.
Well, thanks so much for that call, Deborah. We sure appreciate it. Well, we're going to take a quick break. I know we have some callers on the line. Please be patient with us. We're going to take a quick break, and we will continue our conversation about Ohio property taxes very shortly. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our discussion about property taxes in Ohio, the impact high taxes are having on homeowners, legislative efforts to provide relief, and a push to abolish state property taxes completely. My guests are Ohio State Senator Bill Blessing, a Colerain Township Republican, and Cincinnati Inquirer political reporter Haley B. Miller. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And we have Tom on the line. Tom, thanks for your patience. What's your question or comment?
Thanks, Lucy, and thanks for the show to you and your participants. I was wondering if there wasn't something that could be done at the state level, local level. I was noticing that private member-only country clubs that aren't open to the public are taxed on their land at about 20% to 30% of the surrounding residential rates. And I know that's because appraisals and the like are looking at, you know, the cash flow and the value based as a business, but I think that's a pretty great misuse of valuable land resources in a lot of neighborhoods, not just rich ones, but, you know, we've got country clubs like Makatiwa that have hung on by the skin of their, you know, fingernails for years now. So again, that's one of the areas I would look at, and other differential taxation rates for uses that really aren't serving a public good when we already have public, open to the public golf courses throughout the region. Thanks.
Interesting. Thank you, Tom. We appreciate that call and that question. Senator Blessing, what do you think about that?
Yeah, so I wasn't aware of that, but it does speak to, I think, what he's talking about, where we've had with the property tax, that as it has gone higher, you see developers trying to get abatements, carve-outs, CRAs, you exemptions galore. And that has also led to a tax shift in the grand scheme of things. Howard Fleeter, who's a school funding expert, has, you know, demonstrated how over the past 25 years, all of these things have really led to a shifting of the tax burden to local residents for this. And it's also one of the reasons, ironically, when you look at it, it's kind of led to a situation, as they've gotten these abatements, that they've knocked them down to basically only paying tax on the land, that we now have a land tax for thee, but not for me, sort of situation for residents. So, you know, again, I think a land value tax would really fix that sort of issue. If you're going to have a country club in a highly desirable, developable area that takes up a ton of land, it is going to pay a premium on that compared to, you know, single family homes in the area or even apartments. And so I think that would really solve, you know, the problem for the state. But again, I'm biased on that, but he's not wrong noticing that there are, you know, what I would call preferential tax treatment here for business entities in the property tax space.
Okay. We now have Will on the line. Hi, Will. Thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Hi, Jenza. So just wanted to make a comment. My girlfriend acquired was given a house from her late husband, who had passed away back in 2020. The house is paid off, not paying any mortgage, but it is still a financial burden for her, who's also collecting his Social Security, of course, on limited income. She's paying $10,000 every year for her property taxes. Also keep in mind that half of those taxes, she lives in Beaver Creek, Ohio, where the property taxes is very high. Half of that goes to Beaver Creek City Schools. And, again, it is a burden, especially considering if, you don't have any kids and you probably won't step foot into a Beaver Creek City School as well.
Interesting. Thanks so much, Will. I appreciate that call. Senator Blessing, I want to ask you about that. And that's an argument that I think I've heard, which is, for some people, even if they've got their house paid off, even if you pay off the mortgage, you can still lose your home if you can't pay your property taxes. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that could be a reason some people want to abolish property taxes altogether in Ohio?
Yeah, almost certainly. And we can get into why I think that's a bad idea in a little bit. But no, in this particular case, and this is what I have found frustrating, is that if the state were willing to spend money on something like this, we could put together what is known as a property tax deferral program, which is currently law in Maine and Minnesota. I think other states are looking at it. And I would be remiss if I didn't point out that Senators Reynolds and Craig, sort of bipartisan, have a bill that does just that. And what it does is it allows seniors to tap into their equity in order to pay for their property taxes. And then there would be a lien on that property for when they finally sell or pass away. Because, I imagine that the caller's situation is this person has held this property for a long time, struggling with the property taxes, but they've built up an enormous amount of equity in the property in those intervening years. So being able to tap into that would be a huge bonus for them and would, basically allow them to move forward as if they weren't paying property taxes at all, because they'd be tapping into the equity. But again, there's always a fight over where does that initial seed money come from for something like that? And it would obviously be quite high given the number of seniors that would almost certainly apply for such a thing. And if we're not going to spend state money on that, where do we go? So I sympathize, but again, it's a tricky issue in Columbus.
Yeah. We got an email from Steve who writes, "The real estate tax increases seem to be a topic that connects everyone, yet in Cincinnati, our elected officials seem addicted to giving tax abatements to developers who seek them while citizens continue to pay their 100% share. The abatements are the abrasive that rub the wound raw. Does the senator have any comments on abatements?"
Yes, I don't like them at all, even though you will find folks on both sides of the aisle who will tell you that how else would we develop in Cincinnati or Columbus or wherever if we can't, offer some form of financial assistance to somebody who wants to build an apartment, for example. And I get it. A property tax does have a perverse disincentive to create more housing as it grows, because again, you're taxing the improvement. And I know I'm going to sound like a broken record saying this, but I had the SJR 7, the land value tax, drafted in such a way that these things would not be allowed if that were to pass. So the idea being that, hey, everybody has to pay their full freight under such a regime is something we should push for. And there are members of the General Assembly who are looking at going after these abatements or at least having some sort of democratic oversight. In other words, if you're going to have a TIF for 30 years or a property tax exemption for 30 years, why is it written in stone for 30 years? You should have to reauthorize that over so many years or even have to go to the ballot over a certain period of time. Now, I can't really opine as to whether I think that's the best idea or not, but these do need to be reined in. And the General Assembly is looking at that in the grand scheme of things. But again, a land value tax does not suffer from that sort of thing. Because again, those property tax improvements are not part of the equation anymore. And so it rises really with the value of the land.
We got an email. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Haley.
No, I was just going to jump in with a fun fact, or maybe a not fun fact for those living in Hamilton County, but I've been looking into abatements recently. And so I have a spreadsheet here for tax year 2024, Hamilton County. If you consider CRA, TIF, everything like that, the total tax abatement for tax year 2024 was about $5.1
billion. Billion with a B?
Yes.
Wow. Haley with the spreadsheet. Okay. Well, that's really, that's very interesting information. Thank you for that, Haley. We got an email from Matthew who writes, why not abolish all wealth taxes? This sounds like a redistribution scheme, no matter how you spin it. It is immoral that someone who fully owns their property with no mortgage can have it seized by the government for failure to pay taxes. Cut the spending. Senator Blessing, that kind of gets back at that question we had from the caller whose girlfriend, you know, had all these taxes. Do you think maybe this takes us to this effort to abolish property taxes? You know, what do you, do you think this is this a concern for state lawmakers? Or is there talk about looking at these different wealth taxes in different ways?
So, yeah, I was going to say that this is definitely property tax abolishment adjacent at the very minimum. But here's the thing, you know, whether it's if you're a township, city, county, you're going to need to raise revenue. That's also true of school districts as well. So what's left unsaid in this is that, hey, you know, for some of these folks that are like, let's move to a combination of sales or income tax increases and then just get rid of property taxes altogether, and that's that. And admittedly, that would be significantly increasing both income and sales, or if we increased excise taxes on tobacco, alcohol, marijuana, you name it. The issue, though, is that property valuations are not going to remain static. And I think that's where people miss this, is that one, and if you look at Adam Smith or even Winston Churchill has a great quote about this, if you have no real estate taxes at all, you will definitely have land hoarding, where money will come in and they will buy up property and can sit on it tax-free indefinitely. And what's so insidious about that is that it will drive up the cost of development and housing for everybody else. And they can cash out whenever they want, and it'll make it much worse in the long run. And there is a somewhat relevant example in that California did Prop 13, which really flattened out the increases on property taxes. And what was the net effect of it? Well, public finances over time had been wrecked with much higher taxes elsewhere. But importantly, housing in California is the most expensive in the nation. So I'm convinced this is part of it. So what would happen is, and what I guess I'm trying to say here, to put it succinctly, is that property taxes actually, to some degree, keep real estate inflation in check. Moreover, if you get rid of them, what's going to happen is that now, let's say you're a first-time home buyer, or you want to buy a home. Now, your mortgage is going to be significantly higher because of the massive real estate inflation that's going to correspond to getting rid of property taxes. So now you're going to be paying a lot more to the bank than you otherwise would have with property taxes, and your insurance costs are going to go up significantly because of the same real estate inflation. But the very likely outcome is that the same level of funding is going to be required. You're just going to be paying this with income and sales and whatever else taxes there are. And so I think for the vast majority of Ohioans, they think that this will save them money, but I think it's actually going to be a significant tax increase. Because let's not forget that property taxes are more progressive than income taxes, particularly if they're flat. And the most regressive tax of all is sales. So this is the impact of these taxes are going to be more on low and middle class taxpayers than it will be on the wealthy. So I just tell folks, be careful what you wish for, because that property tax abolition is going to be a massive problem for Ohio if it passes.
We have a lot more to talk about. We'll be back after a short break to wrap up our conversation about Ohio property taxes. If you've got questions or comments, now's the time to call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our conversation about property taxes in Ohio and efforts to help homeowners who are struggling to pay their tax bills. My guests are Ohio State Senator Bill Blessing, a Colerain Township Republican, and Cincinnati Inquirer political reporter Haley B. Miller. If you've got questions or comments, call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Haley, we referenced this briefly before our break, but tell us more about this effort to abolish property taxes in Ohio completely. Tell us what that is and where it stands.
So this is a proposed constitutional amendment. The group behind it, which is very grassroots, they don't have any big money sponsors or major donors like we sometimes see with ballot campaigns. They are collecting signatures for that effort. They have to collect over 430,000 signatures, something like that, by July if they want to put their proposed amendment on the November ballot. They've been collecting signatures since probably the middle of last year. We don't know how many signatures they have. The group's been pretty quiet about that because they say they don't want to give too much information away to the opposition. But we've seen these folks popping up at local businesses. There are people even opening up their homes to people who want to sign the petitions. So it's been a very interesting effort to watch unfold. Like I said, probably the most grassroots ballot effort I've seen since I came to Ohio, but it's very, very hard to get an issue on the ballot in Ohio. There are a lot of steps, a lot of requirements that campaigns have to follow. So it remains to be seen if they're going to be able to pull this off.
Senator Blessing, is this something that state lawmakers are taking pretty seriously?
Yes, I think so. They are looking at this issue, but I think the issue right now is that they're in kind of a holding pattern. I have told them that, again, the land value tax is an alternative proposal to throw on the ballot that would compete with it, and I think would beat it. But I think there's two things at play here. One, let's suppose that it does make the ballot. I think people are going to be very surprised at the coalition that comes out against something like this. I think you're going to see a coalition like we've never seen in Ohio. It's not just going to be all the public sector unions, but it's also going to be local governments. And frankly, I think the business community is going to come out because I think they know that if property taxes go away in their entirety, that their neck is on the chopping block. But I think at the same time, we need to avoid doing something really bad at the General Assembly level, where if they saw that the ballot initiative got the signatures, that they would say, all right, we'll meet you halfway. Well, cutting half the property taxes in the state would still be catastrophic, wouldn't be as catastrophically bad. But it also wouldn't solve the problem for all the reasons that I had mentioned. And I could easily see it, you know, evolving to, hey, let's try this again, you know, a few years down the line, which to me, it really blows my mind that instead of going this route to just say, let's just abolish property taxes entirely, that they didn't say, well, let's go to the ballot with initiated statute for you know, a modified homestead exemption or that property tax deferral program or something like that. If they had done that, it would have been fewer signatures needed, but it would have also meant that they very likely would have seen the support of local governments and schools and maybe even some businesses. So, you know, I guess that's a long way to say that, you know, we're still waiting to see how this plays out, but I think they have until July 1 to collect the necessary signatures.
We do have some callers on the line. Hi, Rachel. Thanks for your patience. What's your question or comment? Are you with us, Rachel?
Hello.
Hi there. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I actually grew up in California, and I'm a transplant to Cincinnati, and it's interesting to hear the conundrum that we're in right now. I was in junior high and high school when Prop 13 passed, and the impact to California schools was devastating. We lost home economics programs first, then we lost the arts, and then we lost even some of the science programs, extracurricular for sure. The only winner in those years was sports, unfortunately. And it had everything to do with Prop 13. I can absolutely validate the senator's observation about property values and what happened and the housing market. I'm from San Jose. The housing market there is impossible to get into now. And when I moved out here in 2007, the reason why I did it was because a beat up house from the 1950s was going for $650,000 in 2007.
In San Jose.
Moving out in San Jose. And moving out here, it was great to find affordable housing. I own my own home, but I too just got hit with the big property tax bill this year, and it sort of knocked the wind out of me. But I don't think abolishing the property tax is the answer. I'm concerned about townships and their ability to collect dollars, because it's my understanding that their funding comes from that. If you haven't already talked about that, I'm sorry if I missed that. But I absolutely also agree with the senator that when we have businesses here in town, or we have sports organizations, or and we're trying to throw out these incentives, I mean, let's not be so desperate that we're going to completely grant them the ability to not pay taxes while the rest of us bear the burden. The rest of us are already bearing the burden for the 1%. And I personally have had enough.
Well, thank you, Rachel. I appreciate that. Thanks so much for that comment. We also have Kathy on the line. Hi, Kathy. What's your question or comment?
I have a question and a comment. One is for Senator Blessing. Right now, I'm really leaning toward voting for the property tax bill that hopefully I will be on the ballot in November. But I am a 50-year resident of Cincinnati. I own my own home. I'm 73. And I just don't understand. The solution to me is pretty simple for some of us homeowners. Raise the homestead exemption, which would help a lot of us out. The other thing, a question I have is, like here in Hamilton County, it's really difficult to pay your property tax bill off in increments. They usually pile it all on the different, every 6 months, they just add it on to the past bill, and it's very hard to get that paid down. That's just basically my question. I think this is a pretty simple solution, but this property tax bill, I think, you know, unless they really come up with something pretty quick, it's going to get voted in.
Yeah.
That's just all I have.
Well, thanks, Kathy. I appreciate that call. Senator Blessing, you want to comment at all on Kathy's thoughts about the homestead exemption or some of these other things?
Yeah, 100%. I would encourage her to look at Senate Bill 215. I have spent way too much time, I think, trying to get that across the finish line. But absolutely, it needs to be significantly increased because inflation has eaten away at it for a number of years now. We did barely do that in a previous budget. But beyond that, you know, it has to continue to be state funded. And it has to have a better sliding scale in that, you know, some of the folks are like, hey, make it 50% for all seniors, for example. The problem is that, you know, it's not good, and it's also much more expensive to give a 50%, you know, property tax cut to somebody in Indian Hill, which nothing wrong with living in Indian Hill, except for the fact that that's, you know, for every Indian Hill home that gets that sort of break, That's like 10 or 20 homes in Coleraine Township for people of much more modest means on that. But no, she's absolutely right on that. And you know, frankly, if those who are, you know, pushing this Axe the Tax ballot initiative, should they fail either to get the signatures or at the ballot, honestly, if they put something like Senate Bill 215 on the ballot, I am convinced they would get it in spades. Mm.
Well, thank you, Kathy. We have another caller on the line. Ed, I'm going to just ask your question for you because we're running out of time. Is there any legislation that could be extended to people whose neighborhoods are being gentrified? In just about a minute, Senator Blessing, any thoughts about that?
Yep. Land value tax is a very anti-gentrification measure because as you find these areas that are becoming harder to develop because property taxes are higher, you want a very pro-density type of tax, which is exactly the land value tax.
Okay. Well, land value tax, we've had a lot of good conversation about that today. Senator Blessing, what, and you think there's going to be more movement on these efforts in the State House? Again, we have like less than a minute for you to answer this, but do you think there's going to be traction on the land value tax or any of these other proposals?
I think we'll have hearings on it, but I think for the most part, you know, big spends on property tax relief programs, I would be surprised if those occurred before everybody breaks for the campaign. So I think you would see more on that later November, December of this year or even next year in the budget.
Yeah. Haley, is that what you're going to be watching for?
Yeah, that's definitely my sense. The legislation that passed last year took a lot of time, and especially in an election year, it's hard to see lawmakers getting much done again before the end of the year or even this year at all.
Okay. Well, we might have to have you both back because we got a lot of questions we didn't get to answer. So you might be hearing from me very soon. Yes. I've been talking with Ohio State Senator Bill Blessing, a Coleraine Township Republican, and Cincinnati Enquirer political reporter Haley B. Miller. Thank you both so much for your time today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. And if you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.